Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 251.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we return to something we haven't done in a while, and that is the famous audiobook specials. This week I'm going to read or perform from Baranak, Storming the Gates. I think it's one of the few of my major novels that I haven't done a reading from yet, and so I thought I'd go ahead and get this one out while the opportunity presented itself. This is from Baranak, Storming the Gates. This is the prequel to Lucian, Dark God's Homecoming, and it's set in the same overall universe and series as the Shattering Trilogy and Hawk, Hand of the Machine. And when I say the Shattering Trilogy, I feel like now, since the whole thing is called the Shattering, I have to clarify the Legion Trilogy is sort of the Shattering Legions Trilogy. Legion 1, Legion 2, Legion 3. Okay, so it's set in that general universe, but it really matches up as a prequel directly to Lucian. So here we go from Baranak. 5. A sword? I was staring at Istari the Renegade, wide-eyed, attempting to process what he had just said. "We have to retrieve a sword?" I asked again. "Just so." He appeared to think for a moment, then, "It will be extremely dangerous. You must be prepared for the possibility of agonizing death." I stared back at him and slowly shook my head. "A sword? A sword is the thing we need most. What in the seven worlds have I gotten myself into?" Moments earlier, the alien I had freed from captivity had decreed what our first order of business would be. "That is," he'd added, "if you do wish to work together to solve both your problems and mine." "Yes," I'd replied. I'd felt it represented the best and perhaps the only opportunity I had left. "We are in agreement. You help me find those responsible for my father's death, and I'll do whatever I can to help you against your enemies." "Very well," Istari had said. He'd coaxed his dark horse forward at a canter, and I, aboard Comet, had followed. "Our first order of business is to retrieve a weapon, the single most important weapon in the galaxy, the one weapon with which we can track down, reach, and if necessary, kill our mutual enemies, no matter where in this cosmos they hide, or in any other." That had gotten my attention. I'd looked at him. "That sounds impressive. What sort of firearm are we talking about?" He'd offered the faintest of smiles, then looked away. "Why, it is no firearm at all," he said. "Then what?" "It is a sword." Thus my exclamation previously described, which brings us up to date. "How," I asked after I had managed to calm myself a bit, "can a mere sword do the things you are describing?" It is no mere sword. It is ancient. He met my eyes as our two horses carried us along. Older than your species, likely older than mine, too. It must go back at least as far into the past as the machine itself. The machine? He chuckled and looked away again. Another time, he said. This galaxy is a vast and ancient place, filled with wonders and terrors in equal measure, about most of which your kind remains blissfully unaware. Let us not needlessly add to your already formidable list of things you must quickly learn. I swallowed that comment without reply, instead considering the larger problem. If this weapon is as powerful as you say, let us go back to Victoria so that I might gather a regiment of my family's troops to help us secure it, I suggested. There is no time and less need, Istari snapped. Udazi the judge, my jailer, whom you followed here, made the mistake of speaking aloud in my presence his destination after leaving my prison, as well as the fact that the one he will be meeting, Elindi the mastermind, is currently in possession of the sword. He grinned, and the look of it actually sent chills down my spine. I therefore know the current location of the sword. I also know they and it will be there for but a short time. After they depart that place, it could be anywhere in the multiverse. I see, I said, though I wasn't at all certain I did. Let us move with greater alacrity, he added. Too much time has been wasted. And whose fault is that, I wanted to ask, but I kept my mouth shut and encouraged Comet to pick up the pace. We rode on without further conversation for a short while. No sounds came to us but the clop-clop of the horse's hooves. I watched with interest as the terrain around me changed and morphed slowly. Fog drifted in, very similar to what had engulfed me on my journey from Victoria. It enshrouded us and produced a tunnel effect, with the two of us traveling down its center. This reassured me somewhat, for I took it to mean we were actually journeying between worlds, rather than this being another case of my companion attempting to trick me, as he had done with the cave. Crosswind struck then, whipping into us from right to left. Before I could so much as express my surprise aloud, the temperature plunged. Frost formed on my extremities. Around us, the swirling colors darkened in sinister fashion, and lightning strobed on either side. Faster! I could just hear Istari crying, though he was scarcely two lengths ahead. Faster! Comet scarcely needed encouragement on that score. He galloped. Still, the storm around us intensified, sheets of rain like tiny daggers jabbing my face and hands. My golden metal mesh tunic provided little in the way of insulation. I was growing damned cold. My breath was a cloud, quickly whooshed behind me, gone. The black horse was really moving now. We fell behind. I had to be quite persuasive with Comet to keep him close on the black beast's tail. We moved at breakneck speed, the tunnel of fog streaking by all around. It twisted and turned and rose and fell as we went, to the point that I felt I'd climbed aboard some ancient roller coaster. A mix of bright and dark colors streaked past within the swirling depths. I ignored it all and urged my mount to ever greater speed. Through gaps in the fog, I could just make out images, strange vistas and even stranger inhabitants of those vistas. I believe I saw a wooden windmill, juxtaposed a moment later with a building that floated over a broad forested plain. A squadron of aircraft flew past on my left hand, and a battalion of tanks rumbled by on my right. Explosions, excursions, and all that. Comet flinched repeatedly, and I worried that his nerve would fail. Still, we pressed on. And then it was over. The clouds around us parted and dispersed. The lights and colors faded and vanished, and I could see solid ground beneath Comet's feet again. Istari reined in his horse, and I did the same. He hopped down, and I followed. We stood on a desolate, wind-swept surface, and quickly I saw that it was a cliff projecting out over rough seas. There was no sun to speak of, though some sort of pale light just managed to illuminate the surroundings. I turned away from the drop-off and the waters and saw another cliff face there leading up into the dark skies. We therefore stood upon a shelf, a stair step, a horizontal interruption in the diagonal, almost vertical wall, located some indeterminate distance down between one drop and another. Before the cliff in front of me was a geodesic dome, all of white, perhaps 20 meters high. I was reminded of historical pictures I had seen of igloos, though this was considerably larger. Also, it did not appear to be made of ice. There was nothing to which we might tether our horses. Istari moved in front of his mount and caught its attention. He looked intensely in its eyes and spoke a few words in a language I could not understand. The horse stood still, not moving a muscle after he was finished. Then he came around to Comet, presumably to repeat the act. "Wait," I said, stepping between them. "You aren't harming them, are you?" "Certainly not, but we can't have them wandering over the edge." I considered, then nodded and moved to the side. He repeated the same trick, and Comet became a statue. "Hurry now," he said. "Time is of the essence. Also, we will need the element of surprise." I drew my gun and followed his long, lean form toward the dome. Seeing no obvious entrance, I wondered how he planned for us to go inside. My unspoken query was answered a moment later as he reached up and touched his fingertips to the smooth white surface, sliding them slowly across it. Directly in front of us, a black rectangle formed. A second later, the section of wall that had filled the rectangle vanished, leaving a doorway leading inside. "Idiots," Istari remarked. "They haven't changed the locks in all this time." He passed through it without a backward glance, frowning. I hurried along after him. Of course he would know how to get inside. He was part of whatever this was, or at least he had been, before his compatriots had kicked him out. The renegade, indeed. I needed more information from him, and about him, I knew. More answers. He deflected me thus far by pleading urgency, but that excuse was wearing thin. We had traveled a fair distance into the structure. He wasn't running, but his stride was so long that I had to almost jog to keep pace with him. We passed along a winding corridor and at last emerged into a broad circular interior space with a high ceiling. What I saw there gave me pause, to say the least. At the center of the big room, massive rectangular-shaped pieces of some sort of very advanced equipment stood in a semicircle, connected to one another by bundles of thousands of thin, translucent cables. At the middle of the semicircle was a low platform or table, and a dozen articulated metal and plastic arms, sparkling with lights along their angled lengths, moved like the legs of some gigantic insect trapped in the ceiling. Bright beams of coherent light stabbed out from the tips of each arm at regular intervals, striking something on the table. None of this, however, was what startled me. No, what truly startled me was the strange, humanoid figure that stood next to the equipment, operating its controls. He appeared to be a man, at least in terms of gender, not so much in terms of species. Also, he was utterly bald, wore a skin-tight, shiny red metallic suit that covered him from knees to mid-waist, and stood at least 3 meters tall, and his skin was olive gray. Another alien. Another kind of alien. I shook my head. This had been quite a day. As we entered, the giant looked up and stared directly at us, with eyes so dark and piercing I was certain they looked through my own flesh and scrutinized my soul. I felt my stomach dropping in the general direction of my feet. Those eyes did not linger upon me for long. They snapped toward Istari and locked on him. "Dormor, my old friend," my companion called, raising a hand in greeting. The gray giant did not respond. He merely continued to stare intently at Istari. We were now halfway across the open space separating the room's entrance from the giant and the equipment. Istari had not slowed in the least. "Where is Udaisy?" he added, looking to one side and then the other. The giant allowed us to approach for a few more steps. He still had not moved. Then his expression soured and he began to stride toward us. It was bizarre and almost surreal. He seemed to move in slow motion, and yet he covered ground very quickly. His massive hands came up, fingers working. Just as the two of them reached one another, Istari sidestepped, pivoted, and swung around beneath the giant's grasp. Springing back up, he placed a slender foot against the giant's back and kicked. Nothing happened. The giant was simply too big, too heavy. The big creature whirled about, and the log-like, meaty arms lashed out again. This time, they succeeded in seizing Istari by the upper arm. Still silent, the giant flung my companion across the room. He hit the floor and rolled to a stop. He did not immediately rise again. I swallowed then because the big creature was now looking directly at me. I attempted a smile and nodded his way. "Greetings," I said, already placing one foot behind the other to prepare for a hasty retreat. The giant took a step my way, and I responded by taking two quick ones in the same direction, preventing the distance between us from shrinking. Sweat trailed down my cheeks and itched my goatee. I was acutely aware of that blast pistol in my right hand, but I seriously wondered about its ability to stop or even slow such a creature. Istari was beside me again then. I hadn't heard him rise or approach. He danced into my line of sight, and this time he raised both hands as he addressed the giant. "Dormor," he began, "hear me out. My conflict is not with you or your kind. You know this. It is with Elendi and the others. They wish to harm the humans for no reason other than fear. You know this to be the wrong path to follow. Surely you, a former hand, can see." The gray giant had heard enough, I guessed. He charged, this time backhanding Istari and sending him sprawling again. It was a remarkable thing to watch. He seemed to move slowly overall, yet when he finally committed to a movement, his individual motions and gestures were sharp, quick, like lightning, and brutal in their effectiveness. I wasn't sure what I should do. Istari wasn't moving. This time he seemed incapacitated. Should I shoot? Would it matter? Should I flee? Even assuming I could escape this being's pursuit, how would I get off the ledge? I scampered over to where Istari lay, figuring he was still the best bet we had, given the circumstances. He lay still as death, though. His previously pale skin looked positively snow white now. I grasped him and shook him and said all sorts of vile things, but he didn't rouse. Then time ran out. The giant lunged, and only by the narrowest of margins did I evade his grasping hands. I brought my gun up to fire, but his meaty paw swatted out and knocked the blast pistol from my grasp. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw it smack the ground and snap into at least two pieces. I cursed. Istari must have awoken at that precise moment, assuming he hadn't been playing dead all along. He leapt to his feet directly between the giant and me, and he struck with a lightning chop to the sternum that actually seemed to give the big creature pause. The giant backed off a step, but then he took his gun and swung with a tight but broad punch that barely grazed Istari. That was still enough to send him stumbling back, the two locked eyes again and charged. I took advantage of the fact that neither was paying me the slightest bit of attention, and I ran toward the equipment at the center of the room. The segmented silver arms continued to move in rhythmic fashion low above the table, blinding beams of hard light flashing from their tips, and now I could see what they were engaged in cutting. It had once been human, of that much I was fairly certain. Given its current state, though, I couldn't tell much beyond that, not even race or gender. I felt as though I were going to throw up. I looked away swiftly, even as the smell washed over me. What were they doing here in this facility? I couldn't begin to imagine. But my animosity toward the big gray alien had just magnified itself by a factor of 100 at least, probably more like 1,000. Turning back the other way, I saw the giant had his Tauri in a sort of stranglehold and appeared on the verge of ripping his head off. Frantically, I looked around for a weapon, something that could possibly be effective against a creature of that size. Nothing. Nothing except perhaps I leapt onto the table, doing my best to ignore the grisly evidence that lay upon it, and grasped the nearest silver arm. It didn't want to be redirected from its program course, and I had to strain mightily, but after a couple of seconds, I managed to angle it upwards. The beam shot wildly across the inside of the dome and struck the far wall, scoring it black. The robotic appendage fought me like a wild fire hose, but I wrapped both of my own arms tightly around it and directed the shimmering orange beam over and down, over and down. The gray giant bellowed incoherent rage as the hard light sliced into his left shoulder. I ignored him and waved the beam into him again. He screamed and released his tauri. I was relieved to see that my companion's head was still attached, though he slumped forward and lay still. The giant scrambled to his feet and came at me, murder in his eyes. I'd forgotten how quick the big monster was because it never looked like he was moving very fast. But he ate up the distance between us in an instant, and the only thing that saved me was managing to get the robot arm pointed back at him. Its beam gouged him in the abdomen and he stumbled to a halt. As he looked down at it, the beam punched all the way through and erupted out his back. He looked up at me again then and bellowed. I had no sympathy for him, none before, and certainly not after having seen what lay on the table at my feet. Plus, I feared he could still easily kill me. He charged again. I waved the beam in and sheared off his left arm just above the elbow. This seemed to take him aback. He halted and stared at the smoking arm where it lay on the floor. Then he looked up at me, dumbfounded. I waited to see what he would do next. I figured he'd come at me one more time. He seemed a pretty determined sort. He didn't disappoint me. He charged one more time. I brought the beam up and sliced into his right leg. He stumbled, bellowing again, and dropped to the floor as the leg sheared off inches below the knee. There was little blood from any of his horrific wounds. The beam cauterized as it cut. Surely that would do it. I released the arm, it continued to fire away, and hopped down from the table. The giant lay on his stomach, mumbling words in a language I couldn't understand. As I neared him, gazing down at what was left of his massive form with a mixture of continued outrage and disgust, he contracted inwards into a ball. I frowned at this. What was he doing? He sprang. How he accomplished this, I could not tell you. He crossed the space between us like a snake, striking, and his remaining hand closed about my ankle before I could react. He yanked me down, and then his bulk lay upon me, crushing me. I stared up into his black eyes, filled with cruel hate, and I cursed myself for my foolishness in approaching him before I'd finished him off, before I'd made him more closely resemble the thing on the table. Holding me down with the weight of his body, his good arm came up, fist poised to smash down into my face. I grimaced as he screamed words in an alien tongue. And then there came a bright orange flash, and his head separated from his shoulders and tumbled away. The big body slumped forward, lifeless and still and completely covering me. I couldn't breathe. I mean, I was unexpectedly still alive, and that was all well and good, but I had no time to consider what had happened or how. I was being crushed to death and suffocated. Managing to draw one of my knees toward my body, I kicked upward and kept pushing, and after a few seconds of this, I'd managed to move the gray bulk just enough that I could draw a shallow breath. I gasped and drew up the other leg and shoved as hard as I could with both. Lord, but he was heavy, and now nothing but dead weight. Absurdly, at that moment, I wanted to laugh at the thought that he'd have been even heavier if I hadn't just sliced a few pieces off of him. But I couldn't draw in enough air to attempt such a thing, so I kept pushing. Then help arrived. Someone was pulling at him from behind. Very quickly, my upper half was uncovered as the giant's bulk slid down, and then it was a matter of extracting my lower half. Seconds later, I'd done it and lay on my back, staring up at the dome above me and breathing as if I'd just run 3 marathons back to back. A tall, slender form moved into my field of view and looked down at me. "Thanks," I said. "No," Istari replied. "Thank you." He held something aloft for me to see. The gray giant's head. "You continue to surprise me, human." I stared at the gruesome item he was clutching like a prize and shook my head, laughing almost maniacally. "The feeling is mutual, I assure you," I told him. That has been an excerpt from Baranak, Storming the Gates by Van Allen Plexico, read by the author, me, Van Allen Plexico. You can get a copy of it in paperback or hardcover from Amazon.com or from WhiteRocketBooks.com. You can also get it on Kindle in ebook form from Amazon or from the White Rocket site as well. That'll wrap things up for this episode. I've just been looking forward to doing a reading from Baranak for some time, and I hope you enjoyed it, and hope you'll join us again next episode. Here's a quick programming note, which I've been mentioning on all the White Rocket Entertainment shows. We will soon be merging all of the White Rocket Entertainment programs into one stream. So if you subscribe to this podcast, soon you'll also be getting the Avengers Assemble podcast, the Formula One podcast, and our new spinoff James Bond podcast, as well as a couple of others that'll be joining the network in the days to come. So the Avengers Assemble podcast feed will be going away summer of 2017, and it will be joining us here in this stream. So all you have to do is subscribe to the White Rocket show that you're listening to now as a regular podcast, and you'll be able to get all of them. You can ignore the ones you don't like and delete them, or just ignore them, and you can listen to the ones you want to hear. So we hope everybody will enjoy this. It'll save our network money, and it'll bring everything together in one place. All right, the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode, and we'll see you all down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.